This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined as always here in the early portion of the week by Adam Burke at Skating Tripods on Twitter. And Adam, we're getting this out on Tuesday as opposed to Monday because, unfortunately, as we discussed 2 weeks ago, the sad passing of our friend and all of our friend in the gambling sphere, Dave Sharapan. His service was on Monday, and I wanted to bring up Dave because one of his favorite lines was "Nobody knows shit," and boy, could that not be more spot on following this weekend. And unfortunately, Dave's alma mater, Penn State, was part of the "Nobody knows shit," because UCLA, as a 24.5-point underdog and a team that got absolutely bullied by New Mexico just a couple weeks ago, puts up a 42 spot and stuns the college football world, beating Penn State. It is the first time since 1985 that a team 0-4 or worse beat a top 10 team. So, Adam Burke, the Penn State Nittany Lions, a team that was around minus $3 to make the college football playoff preseason, is now unranked and has to run the table to make the college football playoff this year.
Yeah, so first of all, I think it's a pretty good open. And honestly, I mean, if there's any way for the sports gods, the sports betting gods, whatever, to honor Dave Sharapan, I feel like his Penn State team losing to UCLA would have been, I mean, he would have fired off some epic tweets for that game, including, you know, "Nobody knows shit." So I don't know. It seems like it's almost kind of bittersweet, I guess, in a way. But yeah, I mean, you know, look, we look at a team like Alabama, for example, right? I mean, this is a team that, you know, is what, essentially, you know, number one in the country in EPA per play margin. And like, they have that loss to Florida State that is still very, very hard to explain. So it's just the nature of college football, my friend.
It really is. And here we go. Week number 7. A lot of fascinating games to get into. We'll get to Adam's updated power ratings as well. But I wanted to start, Adam, just real quickly, because DraftKings does update their to make or miss the college football playoff odds. And I thought a couple of these were pretty interesting as we head into week number 7. I mentioned Penn State. How about this, Adam? Penn State now 6-1 to make the college football playoff after that loss to UCLA. They still have to go to Iowa, have to go to Ohio State, host Indiana. But Indiana heads out to Oregon. And Indiana is a team that, of course, made the college football playoff a year ago. There was a lot of griping over, did they deserve to be there? Did they not? Well, here we are, Adam, week number 7 of the college football season, and Indiana is a minus 130 favorite to make the playoff. And I'll tell you this, we've talked a lot about Indiana, and tomorrow when we have on Wes, he's going to be headed out to Oregon for that game to see his alma mater take on the Ducks. This team is better than they were last year, and when you look at some of these odds to make or miss the playoff, Indiana, one of a handful of teams that are favored to make the playoff right now, but a lot can change, certainly, over the next couple of weeks. Right now, Adam, as we look at the current odds board, there are 10 teams favored to make the playoff. That includes Notre Dame, who is essentially a pick 'em at minus 110 both ways to make the playoff. But as we look at that board, Ohio State, Oregon, Miami, Bama, Ole Miss, Georgia, A&M, Texas Tech, and Indiana. Are there teams in there that you're still skeptical of, have questions about, or do you think are maybe good bets to make the playoff right now?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, you really have to look at Texas A&M, and I don't know that minus 165 is a pretty accurate price here. I think they should be a little bit of a longer shot to make the playoff. I mean, you know, Florida this week, and, you know, Florida just played against Texas and obviously knocked them off. And, you know, LSU on the road, that's a coin flip type of game for A&M. Missouri on the road, that's a coin flip type of game. And, you know, obviously we could talk about whether or not Penn State kept the right quarterback, because it looks like they absolutely did not, keeping Drew Aller around. And then, you know, I mean, they still play Texas in the final game there. So I mean, to me, and I realize they do have that win over Notre Dame, and that's going to be something that, you know, stands out in terms of an at-large profile. But if they lose two out of those three road games, I don't know, right? Because they wouldn't make the SEC championship game in all likelihood. So they don't really get a chance to have one more really strong data point. I think Texas A&M is a team that I would look to go against. I don't know if there's a two-way market at DraftKings. I'm sure there's a two-way market at some of the other shops that are out there. But, yeah, I mean, I would look at Texas A&M, no, honestly. I think they're a team that the path is not super, super clear for them at this point.
Plus 135 on the no for Texas A&M if you want to fade Giggum Aggie. By the way, great uniforms this past weekend. They looked – I love those uniforms as they – You felt like Mississippi State and the market was kind of telling you on Saturday when that thing got bet up to 17, 17 and a half. You're like, ooh, this might be a tricky spot for the fighting cowbells. And it was. They fought for 30 minutes and then ultimately things kind of got away from them in the second half. But I want to dive into your power ratings. And I want to start with Miami. I know this is a team that right now I believe you have sitting at number 5 in your power ratings. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I think there's a fair argument to be had with a bunch of these teams. But I just got to tip my cap. And I know at the end of the game, things got a little squirrely there with Miami. But this is a team, first true road test. They're up 28-3 on the road against Florida State. Carson Beck is a legit Heisman contender. Malachi Toney is just a unicorn, man. That dude is such a special player to watch. And I got to tip my cap to Miami. At this point, when they're, you know, minus 2,000 to make the college football playoff, it's Mario Cristobal, and they certainly could figure out ways to mess this up. But when you look at their resume to this point with wins over Notre Dame, Florida win looks better than it did last week, another win over South Florida, and then a win on the road at Florida State. Miami has aced every test so far this year. They've got a bye week this week, and then, Adam, they head over and take on Louisville on a Friday night, which could be an interesting spot. And we were talking about this briefly on VSiN Primetime. Louisville, a team that you want to back them more in the underdog role because, boy, that was a tough one for me. I had them in a money line parlay. And always fun to see Bill Conley's post-game win expectancy. Louisville, 89.9%, and they did not win the game, Adam.
Yeah, Louisville's been a really big disappointment for me. I thought, you know, with a quarterback whisperer like Jeff Brohm and getting Miller Moss, that, you know, they would be better than they are here so far. Yeah, I saw too from Parker Fleming's success rate. Did we get beat that badly chart? Louisville, I think, was the second unluckiest team from a net success rate standpoint last week to lose a game. So that was definitely something that was pretty interesting. But when you talk about Miami, I mean, they're a double-digit favorite in every game for me the rest of the way. So now this is basically just a scenario, and they've created themselves margin for error, right? Yep. I mean, Jeff Sagarin has their strength of schedule 8th in the country. They're 40th in yards per play on offense, 20th in yards per play allowed on defense. So against the top 10 strength of schedule, they have absolutely looked the part. You're right. And I do think that maybe that Florida win continues to age pretty well because that Gators defense is really, really good. But, I mean, this is all about not doing what Miami does, right? They always find a way to lose a game that they shouldn't. And if they find a way to lose a game that they shouldn't, and then find a way to lose the ACC championship game, which they shouldn't, you know, does that do enough to keep them out of the playoff with some of the recency bias that comes into the equation there? I still don't think so, but still, I mean, this is a team that historically loses to somebody that they shouldn't. And I will say, you know, I mean, I don't think it'll be any of their road games, right? SMU looks like they've got a boatload of problems this year. Maybe Rhett Lashley's halfway out the door. Wants that Arkansas gig. Who knows? Virginia Tech on the road? Nah, I don't think so. Not with an interim head coach at the end of the season where they'll be packing it in. And Pitt doesn't look very good. So unless they're going to find a way to screw up at home, which I don't think they're going to, Miami should absolutely run this table. And then the question will be, are they the number one seed in the college football playoff? Or, you know, will it go to a team that maybe played some more marquee games down the stretch?
Yeah, and, you know, right now, who would be their stiffest competition in a championship game? It looks like after Georgia Tech snuck past Wake Forest, the road seems to be Georgia Tech, but we'll see how the rest of the ACC plays out. All right, I want to jump into your power ratings column that you put up each and every week. We'll start positively. I'm in a good mood today, and I want to hit on a team, a couple of G5 teams, and we'll start with Memphis. Right now, if you look at the odds to make the college football playoff, because as we know, a G5 team will be in the playoff, at least one of them, the odds have shrunk even more for Memphis. Boise State loses over the weekend against Notre Dame 28-7. So Boise State essentially, I don't want to say they're out, but they're in some trouble. And that is not a vintage Boise State team. So two losses, including a loss to a G5 team in South Florida, does not bode well for the Boise State Broncos. But the Mountain West is down, so maybe they'll win it. But Memphis, plus 250 to make the playoff, shortest odds of any G5 team. Another win over the weekend over Tulsa. And the schedule does shape up well for them. They have a bye this week. They host South Florida. They host Tulane. They host Navy. So the three toughest games they have left on the schedule, Adam, are all at home. They do have to go to Greenville in the middle of November, which I guess could be tricky. But how much did you upgrade this Memphis team as they continue to roll along and be the favorite to make the playoff out of the G5?
Yeah, so, you know, it's really challenging when you talk about, you know, updating power ratings and kind of taking into account the data points that you're seeing. I mean, they should have lost that game to Arkansas. Oh, yeah. And now all of a sudden, Arkansas is in a complete tailspin, fired their head coach. You know, so like at the time, I was like, okay, well, this is a game that they should have lost. You know, I was on Arkansas in that game. I had some pretty ample line value on the Razorbacks in that one. So, you know, I was like, all right, well, they should have lost this game. So I'm not really going to adjust them too much. And then, you know, as you start kind of watching this team, as you see the evolution of Brendan Lewis, and, you know, obviously transfer portal quarterbacks are the great unknowns at this point in time in college football. He looks a lot better. I mean, he's a true, legitimate dual threat guy. Maybe Nevada just has really, really bad coaching. I think we've certainly seen that over the last few years. So maybe for Lewis getting out of there, getting some of that FedEx money, you know, that's something that has really benefited this Memphis Tigers program, because I was low on them coming into the season too. Losing Seth Hennigan, losing Mario Anderson, some of the guys they had at wide receiver that were, you know, NFL practice squad, you know, special teams types of players. You know, I thought they would really drop off significantly, and they haven't. And they haven't with a quarterback that came from a Nevada program where nobody on that team really had success. So it just got to a point, it got to a tipping point where I was like, you know what? I simply have to upgrade this team. Gave them a 4.5-point bump. I have them favored by at least 4 in all of their remaining games. And by the way, in that week 14 game at home against Navy, they're off of a bye. Mm-hmm. There's nothing better than a late season bye when you're going to play a triple option team. You're tired, everybody's banged up, everybody's hurt, but that bye comes at a really optimal time for them. So if they can navigate the 5 games before that next bye week, you know, in between this bye week and the one in week 13, then they're in pretty good shape in that Navy game, I think.
Well, I want to jump to Navy real quickly because you texted me over the weekend. This is a box score that you never see from Navy. Blake Horvath, the starting quarterback for Navy. We had a discussion over the summer asking the question, who's the best G5 quarterback? And I said, I think it might be Blake Horvath. He can throw a little bit, and that's the unique aspect of this Navy offense. Drew Cronic brought it in, this kind of hybrid wing T. It's not your standard triple option that we saw for so many years there in Annapolis. And look, we know what Air Force defense is. It's terrible. Boise State put up 49 on them. Hawaii held the ball for, what was it, 37 minutes 2 weeks ago, put up 44. But I don't want to diminish what Blake Horvath is. 130 rush yards, 339 passing yards. And now, as you look at the Navy schedule, and as many people pointed out preseason, you go to Temple this weekend, bye week, FAU, and then the month of November is wild for the midshipmen. At North Texas, Mean Green look legit. How about that game this weekend against South Florida on Friday night? At Notre Dame, South Florida, and then the aforementioned Memphis game. The month of November is going to be pretty telling, and Navy could make some massive waves in the month of November with that schedule.
Yeah, they really could. You know, I mean, I remember we did that exercise of our top 10 returning quarterbacks, and I believe I had Blake Horvath 8th at Navy there because, I mean, he just does so much for this team, so much for this program. And it is really interesting to see them, you know, throwing the football, maybe not more per se, but, you know, certainly creating some more explosive plays. I mean, Horvath's got the 6-3 touchdown interception ratio. It was 13-4 last year, but over 13 yards per attempt for him. So they're creating some big explosive plays. And, you know, obviously if you're going to wear a defense down and then all of a sudden surprise them with some sort of, you know, deep ball, some kind of play action, something like that, it's really interesting to see how they're going to do going forward here, because it gives their offense a lot more wrinkles. And, you know, Horvath is the right guy to be running this thing. And, you know, we're kind of seeing the opposite end of the spectrum here with Army, where, you know, they lose Bryson Daly and they're a shell of themselves offensively. They lost Kanye Udo too. Both of those guys were 1,000-yard rushers last year, but they're a shell of themselves. So it just speaks to how important the quarterback position is for these service academies to see what Horvath is doing. And by the way, just to mention Air Force real quick, Liam Zarka is also a dual threat dude in that Air Force offense. So I would not step in front of an under with this team. Absolutely not. But that defense is horrific. But Horvath and Zarka both really lit it up through the air. And I mentioned this to you, too. Both service academy teams in that game had more passing yards than rushing yards. I really, truly wonder how many times that's happened in that Commander-in-Chief's rivalry series.
Well, I saw our friend Brad Powers in his weekly newsletter mentioning the historical trends of service academy games. I think it was, I don't know if it was hitting like 80% of the under, something insane. And this game flew over all totals. I mean, I know there was a 58 or 59 out there. Well, that was more accurate of where this game closed. Adam,
that,
how about
that
this?
We talked about that, right? That was the FanDuel opener was like 58.5. And then it got down to like 49.5, you know, when other books started opening. and people probably laughed at it and were super happy to grab the line equity on that FanDuel total. And it turns out that they were much closer than the rest of the market was.
By the way, shout out to Dave Sharapan. In addition to his many sayings, his pictures next to CLV trash cans, also a staple of his great Twitter, Twittering over the years. So if you had under 59, think of Dave Sharapan and that CLV trash can. Air Force, how about this, Adam? 5-0 to the over, one of three teams in college football to be 5-0 to the over, and they are hitting the over by 21.9 points per game.
Yeah, so if you look at Air Force, so Arkansas State is 135th in the nation with 7.13 yards per play allowed. Air Force is 136, 7.71 yards per play allowed. They've given up almost 0.6 more yards per play on defense than anybody else in the country, which is just historically inept.
The total this week in Air Force UNLV is, I believe, 68. So it is one of the highest totals. It is not the highest total. That goes to Arkansas and Tennessee. Not anticipating too many stops for a neck brace Bobby in his debut as the interim head coach of Arkansas. But I want to go back here a little bit to your updated power ratings. And I want to get to Old Dominion. I ran into Matoy Pearson, who is a longtime odds maker here in town. And he loves to find a G5 team to kind of gravitate towards. And he calls them Old Dom. He loves Old Dominion this year. And this team's legit. And it's funny, you think back to week one and Old Dominion covers against Indiana. Cignetti's all bent out of shape, how poorly they played. Well, maybe that was indicative of how good Old Dominion is. And I know they don't want to look ahead at them because they have Marshall this week on the road. And this certainly, from a situational standpoint, could be a look ahead, because next week's game between Old Dominion and James Madison is massive. Both teams have a loss to a Power 4 team. James Madison lost to Louisville. Old Dominion lost to Indiana. But these two teams, Adam, they have a shot to make the playoff, especially if the AAC kind of cannibalizes itself later on in the year.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be an interesting game to line if James Madison struggles with Louisiana this week, because they were terrible against a really, really awful Georgia State team last week. Georgia State, now granted it was SEC teams, but they had given up 133 points to the SEC teams that they had faced here so far. And like they held James Madison to 14 points. I think James Madison was getting shut out in the fourth quarter or close to it. I had the under in that game, so that was nice at least. But yeah, if James Madison struggles again this week, I don't know how you line that game, because interestingly enough, Old Dominion has actually played a stronger strength of schedule, according to Sagarin, than James Madison has by 8 spots. And Old Dominion is plus 3 yards per play on offense against FBS opponents so far this season. So they've been remarkable on both sides of the ball. In fact, they're 3rd in the nation in yards per play on offense. And of course, we know Ricky Ronnie, an offensive guy, was the offensive coordinator at Penn State. They've really got it moving there on that side of the football. So be a really big test for James Madison's defense. And yeah, I mean, it's certainly a look ahead spot for JMU against Louisiana. Maybe they stay focused just simply because of how badly they played last week. Maybe that's something that kind of keeps them in gear. For Old Dominion, I mean, Marshall is just so bad and just got stripped of so much last year that I think Old Dominion could play like 80% in this game and still find a way to cover.
Well, and keep this in mind, too, if you're betting futures. And I was talking to a bettor that I respect, and he took a pretty juicy price on Old Dominion, I think either on Sunday or Monday, a number that's not there anymore, 20-1, I think is what he told me, for them to make the playoff, down to 11-1, Old Dominion. Sun Belt is one of the, I think might be the, are they the only conference with divisions still yes. in college football?
Yeah.
So Old Dominion and James Madison, that's an elimination game next weekend. The winner of that game is essentially out of not only winning the Sun Belt, but making the playoff. Now, I guess you could have other losses, tiebreakers, all of that, but it feels like the way those two teams are playing, Adam, it would be surprising to see one of those teams, if they win next week, to get tripped up somewhere down the road 2 more times, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you consider the fact that, you know, I mean, Southern Miss is okay, you know, with Charles Huff, who was at Marshall and brought like half the program with him down to Hattiesburg. Southern Miss is okay. Troy is not very good. I love Bryant Vincent, but UL Monroe is just so Jekyll and Hyde week to week. They're not very good. Louisiana is nowhere near what they've been in the past. Arkansas State's not any good. Texas State, I don't know what the hell's happening there, but they've been a big disappointment this year. South Alabama's not any good. So to your point about James Madison and Old Dominion being an elimination game, like, we're probably trending towards a 3-score favorite in the title game. You know, I'm not saying 21, but 17, 16, 17, somewhere in that range, you know, for whoever comes out of the East. So, yeah, there definitely is a case to be made here, especially if, as you said, you know, the American Conference kind of cannibalizes itself, to have an Old Dominion or a James Madison in there, especially if they can keep winning in impressive fashion. And I think if you're Ricky Ronnie and Bob Chesney, like, you need to think about that, right? We kind of talked about some teams maybe playing for some style points last week on the program, just trying to run it up because they have, like Notre Dame, for example, try to run it up on everybody if you can. If I'm James Madison and Old Dominion, I'm trying to do the same thing, especially the winner of the Week 8 game. Like, I'm trying to go all out and just embarrass teams and say, you know what, I'm sorry, but maybe we'll get you some college football playoff revenue for the conference, but we are not taking our foot off the gas. I don't know, you know, from the metrics formula and, you know, how it's weighted against strength of opponent and all of that, if it would matter enough, but it would at least maybe get you into the discussion.
All right. One more team that you upgraded quite a bit was Wake Forest. I mean, you mm-hmm. think back to the start of the year, they were very fortunate to beat Kennesaw State on that. I think it was a Thursday night. They beat them 10-9. They had a tough beat against NC State. I think they were catching 7 in that game. Felt like they were the right side until they weren't. Got completely screwed by the refs against Georgia Tech, a game they should have won. And Adam, I put them in a situational spot last week because I didn't know what to expect from them following essentially getting their hearts ripped out of their chest against Georgia Tech in a game they should have won. But they went on the road to Blacksburg. I know it's a Virginia Tech program that fired their coach, but they had 1-2 in a row going into that one. And that was a solid result to see Wake Forest get that win. Robbie Ashford has played pretty decently this year. So what have you done with Jake Dickert's squad? Because they have one of the more unique games of the weekend, as after Oregon State traveled to Boone last week, now the Demon Deeks go out to Corvallis. So your old classic Wake Forest Oregon State mid-October game on this Saturday.
Yeah, so I kind of isolated Wake Forest prior to that Georgia Tech game. I had them with the points. I sprinkled the money line a little bit. I wish that that would have gotten there.
Should have.
This is a team with Jake Dickert, right? First-year head coach there, first-year coordinators, obviously. I really like Scotty Hazleton, the DC. I think he's a very underrated defensive coordinator. But this is a team that played August 29th against Kennesaw State, September 6th against Western Carolina, then had the short week Thursday game against NC State. So they essentially played three games in 13 days to start the season with a first-year head coach, a new starting quarterback in Ashford, all the turnover that you get through the transfer portal and all of that. So I was like, you know what? They have a bye week. They have 16 days in advance of their next game against Georgia Tech. This is a team I want to keep an eye on. And then, of course, they should have beaten Georgia Tech, as we've alluded to multiple times here. Did go on the road and beat Virginia Tech, who got that, you know, fired coach bounce a little bit. This is a team that I want to look to play on. Not only this week, I'm going to take them on the strange road trip going out to Oregon State, who I'm going to bitch about in a second. But I want to back them as a dog, you know, kind of the rest of the way here. They'll be a home dog to SMU after another bye. Then they'll be a road dog at Florida State, road dog at Virginia. They probably will be favored over North Carolina at this point. Road dog at Duke. I guess it's a team that's going to continue to be very, very strong against the spread. So I am looking at them. I have one of my biggest overlays of the week on them going out to Oregon State. So I did take the Demon Deacons already in that one. But you talk about teams that should have won their games. You talk about that Louisville game and their win probability from Bill Connolly after the game. Oregon State dug themselves a 17-0 hole against App State. Outgained them badly. Were easily the better team in that game in a lot of the different metrics, a lot of the different categories. Had chances in the fourth quarter through interceptions, turned it over on downs deep in App State territory. It was the most excruciating, you know, plus 1.5 money line sprinkle loss I've had in quite some time. But that being said, I mean, I had to adjust, you know, to where the market was, because I had Oregon State minus 5.5. They closed a 1.5 point dog. So I had to make my adjustment. Part of the reason why I have Wake Forest such a big favorite here, you know, double adjustments on both of those teams this week. But man, like for Oregon State, you know, they're winless, right? They're orphaned. They'll be in a conference next year, but there was an exodus of talent. Like, I don't know, man. It feels to me like if you're Wake Forest and you can get 2/3 of the way to bowl eligibility, I think they show up in this game.
Yeah, I highlighted the Louisville game earlier that you mentioned. Post-game win expectancy, according to SB Plus, was 10.1% for Virginia, 89.9% for Louisville. The second most lopsided one was the game that you alluded to. So, thankfully, the both of us were on the wrong side of ridiculous post-game win expectancies, as Oregon State's post-game win expectancy against App State was 87.6%. So, yeah, a couple of pretty wild ones. I will mention this. Navy, by the way, according to SB Plus, 38.4 post-game win expectancy. So, according to just the data there, Air Force was probably the right side. Air Force covered with relative ease there. Before we take a break, Adam, and we'll hit on the stock down on the other side of the break. Any other teams you want to highlight that you upgraded heading into Week 7?
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of upgrades. I mean, these are kind of market adjustments more than anything. Purdue and Maryland. You know, Washington, talk about pulling one out on the road, you know, with a massive fourth quarter there against Maryland. I had that line more like 9, so I had to make an adjustment. And I think it was Maryland that I was a little bit low on because of how Malik Washington has played here so far. I bumped Maryland and Purdue both up 3 points. You know, I think Purdue is actually improving under Barry Odom. I think it's interesting that the offense is improving a lot faster than the defense is, but over the long haul, you would certainly expect a guy like Odom, you know, to kind of improve the defense quite a bit as we go forward here. A couple other teams I moved up 2.5 points. Southern Miss, just kind of mirroring the market there. UCLA, obviously, with a nice win for them. And San Diego State. You know, San Diego State is a team that is actually playing at a pretty high level, I think, right now. I have some line equity on them, some line value on them this week against Nevada, who, as I mentioned, that program is just really, really poorly run. So I'll probably end up on San Diego State again this week. I have them laying 10.5 at Nevada, and the number is a little bit lower than that in the market.
San Diego State's a good team, man. And we had Joshua Nunn from Action Network, Step on a Duck 1 on the podcast over the summer. One of the win totals he liked was San Diego State. And outside of, you know, a poor performance, I believe, up in Pullman, they've had actually a really good year here. I will say this real quickly about UCLA. We'll talk more about it in the next episode from a situational standpoint. If you are into player props, and you know the Twitter handle Eric Froton from NBC Sports, he's a really good handicapper when it comes to these player props. I want you to ask yourself a question. Have you ever seen Eric Froton and Jerry Neuheisel in a room at the same time? I'm pretty confident those are the same people. So just next time you get a chance, just take a look at that. But what a win for UCLA. And I don't know how they get off the mat after that one and go on the road for a 9 a.m. local kick against Michigan State. But what a performance that was there for UCLA. Hey, just a reminder, as you all know, Rainbow Authentics has been a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast all throughout the year. Your official source for game-used apparel, autographs, and trading cards for your favorite University of Hawaii student-athletes. Every item tells a story, whether it's a game-worn jersey, signed ball, or unique collectibles. You're capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive gear like the hat I'm wearing here and word on the street, maybe some shirts coming down the pipeline. So we'll keep our eyes out on that. Rainbow Authentics is here to make sure you look your best every game day. So check it out, rainbowauthentics.com, if you want to help support Hawaii athletics. Mahalo to our friends over at Rainbow Authentics. All right, let's take a quick break. On the other side, we'll dive into some of the stock down teams that Adam has adjusted from a negative standpoint, and also market correction or overreaction. We'll do that. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Busy, busy time of year, Adam, over at VSiN.com. An exciting day. We have a new guide out. So what do we got rolling over at VSiN.com?
Yeah, shout out to my senior editor, Zachary Cohen, our guide designer, Matt Devine, Jimmy Coleman for the new cover. The new redesigned cover looks really, really sharp out there. NBA betting guide, 2 weeks in advance of the season. The season starts on October 21st. So 30-team previews, some tips on live betting, which I know a lot of people love to do with the NBA. It's one of the big reasons why the NBA is, you know, second or third in betting handle for a lot of the sports books that are out there because of all the live bets that are made. So some good live betting tips, some things to keep in mind, some futures stuff from Jonathan Von Tobel, Kelly Bidlin, a strong contributor in there as well, not to mention several hosts sending in their best bets for that guide. So a lot of great things going on at VSiN.com right now, covering all the sports. Our college basketball betting guide comes out October 23rd. But for now, we're celebrating the release of this NBA betting guide, which I think is an excellent publication to get you ready for the season. $9.99 introductory offer is a thing. We have our Sports Equinox special coming up here soon, too, because that'll be October 27th as the Sports Equinox, which is the day that MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL are all in action at the same time. So we'll have a special coming up for that. But you know, just hop on, go to VSiN.com/pro and just see which offer works best for you and get your hands on that NBA guide. And also for those who are listening to this quickly with a quick turnaround, NHL season starts tonight, and Jonathan Davis put out all 32 NHL team previews a couple weeks ago, and he'll be starting up his daily article as well. So lots and lots of stuff going on at VSiN.com.
Look, $9.99, you're going to spend more than that on any NBA preview that's out at the grocery store, Target, Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble still exist?
I think so.
So $9.99.
Does Books A Million still exist?
Maybe. I would think so.
I know Walden Books isn't a thing anymore.
I think Borders is gone, right? Borders.
Yeah,
no
Borders
longer.
Is gone. Do you remember B. Dalton? Did you have one of those growing up on the East Coast?
I don't think I had one of those. Or no.
Wherever you were, Midwest, wherever you were.
You're the Midwest guy. I'm the East Coaster.
Where was Muhlenberg?
Allentown, PA, baby.
That sounds like some BFE town in Iowa or something. You can understand my confusion, right?
Allentown, right there in the middle between New York City and Philly, baby. All right. Let's get to...
Wait a minute. Wait, are there mules in that part of town?
I never saw a live mule. I saw our mascot outside of that.
You had a mule mascot.
I was on Ben Hartstock and Bobby Carpenter's show on Sirius XM 84 on Friday, and we Zoom during the interview, and they saw my jersey, which I say is more tongue-in-cheek because, you know, Bobby Carpenter's, you know, one of the great Ohio State players of all time. Ben Hartstock was a wide receiver, tight end at Oklahoma, and I'm like, yeah, I was a bench warmer at D3 school. So I just put this in the background just to kind of mess around, but... yeah, they were asking about the nickname the Mules, and I believe the story goes they used to be the Cardinals, and newspapers just kept calling them the Mules because of the name Muhlenberg, so they just switched it to the Mules. So there you go.
What was the mascot's name?
No one needed to know about Muhlenberg College.
I needed to know. I was curious. I don't care if anyone else needs to know. I needed to know, and this is my show.
Well, but once upon a time, my show. Speaking of college football, my alma mater did make it to the Final Four about – I think it was about 5 years ago. So shout out to it's a good football program. We could do better at basketball. I'll just say that. All right.
Did the mule have a name, or did you guys just call him the mule?
I think he was Marty.
Marty.
I might have to ask my wife. I might have to ask my wife. Marty the mule.
Wasn't Ray Finkel's nickname the mule in Ace Ventura? Right.
Finkel is Einhorn. Einhorn is Finkel.
Yeah, he was the mule. Yeah. All right.
No easy transition from a little Einhorn talk to Penn State, but here we are. What did you do with Penn State after that loss as a 24.5 point favorite?
Franklin is Einhorn. I don't know. Penn State sucks. Like, you know what? I've been such a Drew Aller hater for such a long time, and I shouldn't be because he's from the suburb of Cleveland, so I probably shouldn't be. But I don't know, man. Kid was so hyped going to Penn State, and like, here's the thing, man. You could be a really good recruit, but if you don't improve while you're in college, it doesn't really help. And Andy Kotelnicki has not been an upgrade as the OC. They cannot run the football this season, and we talked about that last week.
That's stunning, Adam, because. Right. You look at this stable of running backs and the discussion coming into the year, get ready to drink people because I'm going to mention Notre Dame. Catron Allen, Nicholas Singleton versus Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love. What's the better backfield? And I actually lean towards Allen and Singleton. At this point, I mean, they only had 19 combined carries against UCLA, but 89 yards combined. And here's the thing, Adam. As probably has been pointed out by many, but it's worth repeating. Think back to the New Mexico game. New Mexico ran it down UCLA's throat. 298 rushing yards. And Penn State and these two pro running backs combined for 89 yards? Like, that's a flat-out embarrassment.
Yeah, I mean, if we kind of retroactively want to award the Heisman for last season, Tyler Warren probably should have won it because without him,
how he's playing in the NFL too.
That too. Without that dude, they are lost, man. They are so lost. And, you know, I mean, I'm going to blame James Franklin because I really enjoy doing that. If he goes for two and they win that game in regulation against Oregon instead of going to overtime, and it's not a devastating loss before you travel out to LA, like, how does that change the course of the season for Penn State? Now, obviously, there's no guarantee that they get it if they go for two and, you know, win the game, or that Oregon doesn't find some way to get into field goal range for Atticus Sappington, who has one of the best names in college football. But, like, Franklin put his tail between his legs, didn't go for two. I don't even think he thought about going for two. I guess an Oregon defense that had been out there for a while, was gassed, was tired. Like, I don't know how that changes the complexion of their season, but... you know, Jim Knowles ain't getting it done. Andy Kotelnicki ain't getting it done. One of the most expensive coaching staffs in college football. They spent a bunch of money on wide receivers in the portal, and they're not really doing anything. 5.5 point drop for Penn State here. 4.5 yards per carry, and their two Big Ten games. Like, that's just bad, you know? So, teams are daring Penn State to beat them through the air, and it's very clear that they can't do it with Drew Aller. So, that kid's costing himself a lot of money, you know, this season, because he probably would have been a top half of the first round pick. And who knows, maybe he still will be, because, you know, he's a tall dude with a good arm, so NFL scouts are going to think he's a safe player. But what a dumpster fire, dude. 5.5-point drop for them, and who knows if I keep going more as the season goes along.
Well, you can't say dumpster fire without saying North Carolina. And yep. This past weekend, hopefully everyone enjoyed the 9 a.m. Ludacris concert, because they certainly did enjoy the football game that kicked off at noon down there in Chapel Bill. 35-3 at halftime. And look, this was the underachievement bowl of the year. Clemson, after the way that they've started with the losses to Georgia Tech and LSU, okay, you can pallet those, but to get boat raced by Syracuse. But they come off the bye, and Cade Klubnik looked like he was supposed to look this year. He was 22 of 24, 4 touchdowns. They obliterated North Carolina, hashtag 33rd NFL team. And now UNC, when you look at what they've done so far this year, a 34-point loss to TCU, a 25-point loss to UCF, and a 28-point loss to Clemson. They have a bye week this week before headed out to Berkeley to take on JKS and company. What have we done with UNC? Because this is a absolute nightmare.
Well, a 3.5-point drop probably doesn't seem like enough based on everything that you just listed off there. But this has been a very progressive downgrade of the Tar Heels. And, you know, something that I don't know how privy, if at all, we're going to be to this. But, like, if an NFL team is struggling and Bill Belichick, with all of his years of NFL experience, goes into the locker room and just tears everybody a new one, like, these guys are going to be motivated, right? They're professionals. They're getting paid to do what they do. Obviously, college players are getting paid now, too. But, like, they're going to take it in a different way than college kids, who are probably going to walk out of that room talking to their friends and teammates, dropping all kinds of awful things about Bill Belichick. So this can't possibly be working well behind the scenes either, where he's not really accustomed to working with 18 to 23 year old kids. You know, except for maybe the girls he dates. So, you know, like, I don't see how this improves in any way, shape, or form here throughout the rest of the season. The talent's not good enough. Obviously the play calling is not good enough. And also, I mean, there's a sign on this team's back too, right? Because everybody wants to say we beat a team coached by Bill Belichick, and all the coaches in this conference want to show this guy, yeah, college football is not as easy as you think it is. And all these different types of things. So, you know, typically you don't think of a bullseye on a team that's as bad as they are. But I think that there's great incentive across the conference. Not collusion, but I'm sure these coaches have talked about it at symposiums and media days and all of that. Where, like, they want to beat the hell out of this team. And I think they're going to have the chance to do it the rest of the way.
All right. Any other teams you want to highlight in your market adjustments down?
Yeah, so I dropped Oregon State 4.5 points. You know, so obviously an 8-point move for me in that Wake Forest and Oregon State game probably explains why I have Wake Forest like an 8-point road favorite in that one, quite a bit higher than the market. I dropped Boston College 4 points. So Dylan Lonergan, their starting quarterback, was actually fourth in the nation in passing yards going into last week's game, and he wound up getting benched. So not a great look for Boston College. They gave up 106 points in 3 conference games here so far. You talk about, you know, NFL guys thinking they can coach college football. Maybe Bill O'Brien's kind of finding out it's really not that easy there at BC. So a big drop for them. And then also, so you talk about bad losses in college football, and they're going to happen, right? I mean, things happen. Kids aren't focused. Kids aren't motivated. Sometimes maybe kids don't care. You know, you never really know. Ohio losing to Ball State is a really, really bad loss. And the market was lower on Ohio than me for a few weeks in a row here. And I kind of thought, all right, well, you know, maybe it's just because of the coaching change. You know, maybe they like the other team a little bit more than I do. Maybe Ohio is not the problem for me. And then the Bobcats lost to Ball State. And I went, now it makes sense. So I dropped the Bobcats 4 points in my power ratings, and it may continue to go farther than that because this team is clearly not what I thought they were, and losing to Ball State is a prime example of that.
All right. A little time for market correction or overreaction, as I always pull the look-ahead lines at DraftKings, which are posted on Wednesday, and then compare it to the market. So some big moves, some not so big moves. I want to start with Alabama at Missouri. This is a great situational spot for Missouri, but it is also fair to ask, who has Missouri played so far? Look-ahead line for this game was 6.5. It is now 3 across the market. So a lot of love has come in on Missouri here in this spot. I took a little Missouri plus 5.5 over the weekend, but is this an overreaction or a market correction to Alabama at Missouri?
So I have Alabama minus 3. So I do agree with the line trending down to where it did. And, you know, obviously, as we've talked about multiple times already, did Penn State keep the right quarterback? This is probably the game where we truly find that out, right? I mean, Prebula's look great here so far, but, you know, to your point, I mean, the win over South Carolina not aging super gracefully. The Gamecocks are okay, but, you know, the win over Kansas, okay.
Yeah.
But also we've seen Kansas, you know, kind of be sort of all over the place. I mentioned already Louisiana's bad. UMass is the worst team in the country now for me.
After UMass a power is an underdog adjustment. To Kent State.
Yes. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that game because you know I was going to at some point.
That is,
but I'm glad that
is the greatest. That is what was the game a couple years ago? It was like Akron versus who was it? Akron versus UMass or was it UMass? I can't remember. There was a game where it was the two by far worst teams in the country playing each other. But yes, we have UMass as an underdog to Kent State. Just put that into your brains there for a little
Kent
bit.
State, who, by the way, hasn't beaten an FBS team since November 26th of 2022. So, yeah. But, I mean, back to this Alabama-Missouri game. Like I said, I have it 3. I mean, I'm still unsure of how good Alabama is. I know that Ty Simpson is really, really good. I'm not certain about the rest of the team, right? I mean, that Alabama-Georgia game could have swung either way. There were a lot of momentum swings in that game. Alabama felt like they were in control. And then in the second half, Georgia looked like they were in control and were going to come back and win. The aforementioned loss to Florida State that I talked about toward the top of the show. And then Vanderbilt, Diego Pavia is great. And like Vanderbilt's run it up on some people. I still don't think the Commodores are really all that good of a team. So I don't know what Alabama is, but I sure as hell don't know what Missouri is. And by the way, Missouri will play their first road game of the season next week at Auburn.
Yep.
So October 18th is their first road game, which is just wild scheduling.
Yeah, you think about Oklahoma and the schedule that they've been given from the SEC, and then Missouri these last couple of years has just been dealing with somehow this beautiful schedule, and they get a chance against Alabama off a bye, and Alabama playing back-to-back games against Georgia, and say what you will, that Vanderbilt game was a challenge. There's no doubt the game day was there. They forced a couple of turnovers. I've loved what I've seen from Ty Simpson. People listening to this podcast know how high I was on Alabama coming into the year. This is a tricky spot for sure. And I think no doubt Missouri is a live dog.
Let me ask you this real quick, though.
Yeah.
So schedule the rest of the way for Missouri, right? As I said, they finally play a road game next week. They're at Auburn and they're at Vanderbilt. So I guess we'll see, you know, another litmus test measuring stick game for Vanderbilt. Texas A&M at home, Mississippi State at home, Oklahoma on the road, Arkansas on the road, and God knows what Arkansas is by that point. Can I interest you? I don't think I'm going to do this, but I'm going to ask you. Can I interest you in Bo Pribula to win the Heisman?
Oh, I thought you were going to go Missouri to make the playoff at 2-1. Bo Pribula to win the Heisman. Look. Famous last words, because they could go out and beat Alabama and his number's going to skyrocket. He's 35-1. I bet you there's some better numbers out there, but I'm looking at DraftKings right now. I don't think so.
No. Okay.
Because I'll say this, who's better on Missouri, Prabula or Ahmad Hardy?
Yeah, but I mean, it is a quarterback driven award.
I know. except last year. But Hardy, by the way, Hardy does have shorter odds right now than Pribula. So could they be a canceling out situation? I don't know.
I guess Georgia ran the football very well against Alabama. But to me, I feel like when you beat Alabama, you do it through the air. You don't beat them on the ground.
Couple other games I want to hit on here, just looking at market movement here. Let's go to Eugene. Both these teams coming off byes, Indiana and Oregon. Kirk Cignetti is 12-4 ATS as a favorite, and in the two times he's been an underdog, albeit last year, failed to cover both of them against Ohio State and Notre Dame. We said it in the early portion of the show, this Indiana team is better than they were last year. They've got a better quarterback. They've got better skill players. Number went from double digits last week. Now we're looking at 7.5 across the market with Indiana at Oregon. Is this an overreaction or a market correction?
I don't know. I realize that's not the spirit of the segment, but I don't know, because like I think Oregon was the number one team in the country for me last week. It's now Ohio State because their defense is just outrageous. I have Oregon -8.5 in this game. I'm really curious to see how Indiana matches up from a talent standpoint, because it was clear that they can. We've talked about this already. They're very, very good in the bully role. You just cited the numbers for Cignetti as a favorite and as an underdog against the spread. They're really good in a bully role. But when they played Ohio State, they were clearly no match for the Buckeyes. And that Notre Dame game really, to me, that wasn't as close as it felt either. So, or as close as it finished up. So now you face an Oregon team back at home. Dante Moore looks legit, looks like the real deal. Oregon's defense, what they did against Penn State stopping the run, was super impressive. I think that to some level, this is a market correction just because Indiana does look better. But at the same time, I kind of wonder if this is also part overreaction, because Oregon's just way more talented, in my opinion.
All right. We probably should have led the podcast with this. I'll be honest, as we are, you know, at the 50-minute mark here. But we saw a tweet from Pete Thamel about an hour or two ago. We're recording this on Tuesday morning. And, man, that's why we're seeing market movement here. John Mateer apparently is going to try to play. Here's the tweet. John Mateer is pushing to return this week for a game against Texas. There's belief that his return is possible as he's reacted well to surgery. Adam, we're seeing the market kind of go nuts here, and it is down to a pick'em at the Westgate Superbook, Texas and Oklahoma. Call me crazy. I'm going to load up on Texas here. If I don't believe it, I don't think he's going to be back. If he's back, I'll put my tail between my legs and say I was wrong. But, man, this is a pretty stunning development. I don't think he's going to play. And if Michael Hawkins is the starter and I'm getting Texas at a pick against Oklahoma on a neutral, I will bet that every single day.
Man, this is so tough, right? Because we all know how bad Arch Manning has looked. I mean, everybody knows it, right? There's no secret how bad this kid has played. And he's under a ton of scrutiny, right? I mean, this has to be a really, really difficult thing for him. You know, not only really navigating his first time as a starter, but also, like, staying off of social media and not hearing all the outside noise and all that. I mean, two more picks for him against Florida and that losing effort. I still, with Mateer in this game, make Texas a 1.5-point favorite. So I think to some degree the market is overreacting a little bit right now. And also, right, it's in Brent Venables' best interest to leak something saying that he's likely to play, right? Because then maybe Texas isn't preparing as much for Michael Hawkins. I mean, I don't know what Michael Hawkins is going to do in this game. He's a guy that can run around a little bit, not to the degree of Mateer, but you know, maybe they're not focusing on him as much. I don't know. Also, like, this is a quick return from a thumb surgery on your throwing hand, right? So he's going to try to play. That's cool. Is he going to be any good? Can he grip the football? Are we going to get to a point midway through the second quarter where he's just ineffective? It hurts too much to throw. You know, they're worried about losing him for additional games. You know, does he bang it on a helmet? I mean, there's any number of things that could happen here that could take him out of this game that he starts and doesn't finish, or starts and doesn't really look very good. And they're like, well, you know what? Hawkins at 100% is better than Mateer at 75, right? So, I mean, I get it, right? The market has to move on something like this. And maybe it's not even betting action, right? Maybe it's just the sports books moving on air, moving on news, trying to get in front of what they expect to happen. I will not be betting this game. I do not want any part of Arch Manning right now in a coin flip game. But I don't know, man. I don't know if this is activity related or if it's just the sports books just trying to get out in front of it.
If it's healthy John Mateer, I mean, what's Oklahoma? A three-point favorite in this game, maybe more? Obviously, Texas has been a team that has been wildly overrated to this point, and losing to Florida is an ugly loss. The market certainly loved what they saw in Florida, and that was a bet that we certainly had. But, man, maybe this is – look, they call it gambling for a reason, right, Adam? And if I'm getting Texas on a neutral at pick against Michael Hawkins, I'm going to make that bet a lot. And Oklahoma's defense is the real deal, but I saw what Michael Hawkins was capable of last year against Texas. And, look, I know it's not fair to do it, but he did play a game last week, and it wasn't that impressive against a team that is – hasn't won a FBS game since 2022 in Kent State. So I'll believe it when I see it. And if Mateer's out there, apparently a statue needs to be made for Dr. Shin, who performed the miracle surgery on this dude's thumb.
Is Oklahoma's defense legit?
I think so.
Like, do we know that yet? Right. I mean, Michigan, we saw the offensive issues that they had early on in the season, you know, Bryce Underwood, first time starting quarterback, you know, game on the road in Norman, right? I mean, that really wasn't that big of a surprise, his performance. Auburn's not very good offensively. And obviously Oklahoma knew Jackson Arnold inside and out. They recruited him. He played in the program. They knew his tendencies, how he was going to think, all that kind of thing. Oklahoma's played the 87th ranked schedule in the country, according to Jeff Sagarin. I don't know that we know that Oklahoma's defense is good yet. And I don't know if we'll find that out this week because Arch Manning is not playing well, but at South Carolina, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Alabama, Missouri, LSU, the rest of the way, like, I can't believe this team is even money to make the playoff. Like, they're probably going, I would say they lose, I would say conservatively, they lose three of those six remaining games. So, like, I mean, Mateer's good. And obviously, you know, you hope he doesn't get re-injured or anything like that, but I don't know that we know that this defense is good yet. So, honestly, I think if you can find a reasonable price on Oklahoma to not make the playoff, probably, what, minus 120, minus 125, something like that, I think that's a pretty good bet if we're being honest, right? I mean, coin flip game this week, you know, they'll be favored on the road at South Carolina, but not by a ton next week. I mean, are they a home favorite to Ole Miss? I don't know. I know they're a dog at Tennessee and Alabama. And if Missouri, you know, does well with, you know, their schedule ramping up a little bit, maybe that game's got Missouri as a road favorite. Like, I think Oklahoma minus 120 to miss the college football playoff is a really, really good bet.
Yep, that's the number right now out there at DraftKings. So I know we kind of close with the big news of the day here, Oklahoma and their optimism. But let me ask you this from a gamesmanship standpoint, just to kind of put the tinfoil hat on. If he's going to play, why does this get leaked now? Oklahoma would do everything in their power not to have this leak. I think this is a little gamesmanship, and I think Brent Venables is putting this out there to kind of get in the heads of Texas. I don't think John Mateer's playing. Maybe he surprises us, but, like, Adam, if John Mateer has any chance to play, don't you do everything in your power to avoid having this leaking to Pete Thamel? And, like, as good as Pete Thamel is, I think this was a, in my opinion, kind of a leak from Oklahoma that was on purpose. So just kind of playing a little tinfoil hat here. I don't think if Mateer is trending in this way that Oklahoma wants this news getting out.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with that. You know, obviously I'm a big Major League Baseball fan, and, like, watching the way that these teams and these agents just play these national beat writers, you know, like a fiddle. I mean, it's very easy to do, right? Because you're in this social media generation where breaking news first matters so much, you know, for your reputation, particularly if you're right. And, you know, obviously Thamel's not saying that he's going to play. He's saying he's going to push to play right. and try everything he can do to play, which, you know, is kind of vague. But at the same time, like coming out on a Tuesday, you're thinking like, okay, well, he's going into a week of practice feeling pretty well. So maybe this is a real thing. But yeah, I mean, the way that you can kind of, you know, push narratives out there by using these people as a vessel, it's just so rampant in sports right now. And to your point, right, like if he was going to play, maybe he plays, I don't know. But if you had a degree of certainty that he was going to play, you are not telling a soul. And I realize getting college kids to keep their mouths shut is probably difficult, but you're keeping this under wraps as much as you can, like you said. And for it to drop on a Tuesday, like early afternoon, especially Norman time, I would lean towards him probably not playing, if we're being honest.
Yeah. I mean, the guy, as you mentioned, he had surgery on his thumb two weeks ago on his throwing hand.
Right.
Right. And now we're supposed to say he's going to be back for this game against Texas, but it's a massive one, as we know. And this is a game that they certainly had circled. By the way, the game of the year line in this one, Oklahoma +10 at the Westgate Superbook. And now it is a pick'em at the Westgate Superbook. So quite the move from where we were over the summer to where we are now. Adam, before we get out of here, another movement and a game that you actually wrote up as a best bet. And to make it the trifecta, our colleague Stormy Bonantoni will be on the sidelines for it. We've got Arizona State at Utah. Look ahead was 4.5. Now mark it at 6 in favor of the Utes. Night game up in Rice-Eccles. What do you make of this one as we wrap up the show?
I like Arizona State here. I mean, I make this number 2.5. So I like Arizona State in this game. I think Kenny Dillingham, while the final scores haven't been overly impressive, this team is moving in the right direction. And you can kind of tell that, like, they're starting to get their swagger back a little bit, their groove back a little bit. And again, for Utah, like, the one time they stepped up, they looked really bad at home against Texas Tech, particularly late in that game, right? West Virginia is in shambles right now. Plus, their starting quarterback was hurt in that game. Wyoming is no good. UCLA is, you know, I mean,
well, they're a juggernaut last week aside. Now.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true.
If Jerry Neuheisel was calling the plays, they would have beat Utah.
Yeah, right. I mean, if they would have fired Deshaun Foster earlier, you know, they probably would have won that game against Utah. But look, I will pay to see it. Right. There's no indication from me to this point that Utah should be laying 6 against Arizona State. And I get Devin Dampier is exciting and, you know, he was a highly rated transfer and it's really cool that Utah brought him in. But like, remember, this dude was playing at New Mexico last year. No offense to New Mexico. And he had as many touchdown passes as he had interceptions, 12-12. Like, the Big 12 is a step up in class. And the one time he's had to go out there and play against a pretty good team, he didn't play super well against Texas Tech. 2 interceptions, 25 of 38, just 162 yards passing, 11 carries for 27 yards. Like, that's not a great performance for a guy I'm supposed to lay 6 with now against the second best team they've played this season. So clearly the second best team they played this season. So yeah, I think Arizona State is the side in this game. I think this number running out is just going too high at this point.
You can follow Adam on Twitter at Skating Tripods. Read all of his content over at vsin.com, including his updated power ratings, which we discuss every week here on the podcast. Do hit us with a 5-star review. What do you got, Adam?
Also, including weeknight game previews as we start Wednesday night Conference USA football this week.
Yes, sir.
So for those of you who were lamenting the fact that you didn't have college football to watch on Wednesday nights, it will not be good college football. But you have college football to watch now. So I did write up Liberty and UTEP, which I have a play in. Also Missouri State, Middle Tennessee. And then this afternoon, I'll write up the Thursday games, which East Carolina and Tulane is a banger of a Thursday night game. And then Friday, we get South Florida and North Texas. So some really, really good weeknight games I'll be covering over at vsin.com. And also next week, we get Tuesday night Conference USA football. So we get Maction starting in November, but we get Conference USA Tuesday and Wednesday, starting next week. So I wanted to make sure I dropped that in there just because I write them up, and there may be more eyes on those previews than there are eyes watching the games.
The Liberty UTEP game is going to be a hate watch for you. Liberty is massively let you down.
My
for that
God.
One.
How were they so bad? Like, I understand going from Caton Salter to Ethan Vasco was going to be a downgrade, but I'm like, well, Vasco was recruited to Coastal Carolina. Jamie Chadwell put up obscene numbers at Coastal. Maybe Grayson McCall was just really, really good because, Christ, Liberty sucks. I mean, go read the preview. There's more about how Liberty sucks.
By the way, Inside Carolina reporting that UNC is no longer moving forward with the in-season documentary on Hulu. So there you go. Things going very well down in Chapel Bill these days.
Wow. So this is from the actual NFL account. I know we're not an NFL podcast, but the Bengals traded for Joe Flacco.
Yep.
Okay, then.
Yep.
All right. Well, football.
Football
being a 24/7 thing, there's always something like that at some random part of the day that just surprises the hell out of you. And it's great.
I think once we're bringing up Joe Flacco and trades, I think that's time for us to sign off. Do give us a 5-star review if you're still listening to this podcast. God bless you. You're the true ones. You're the true MVPs. You probably have already given us a 5-star review, but do it again. And also, we're up on YouTube at youtube.com College Football Betting Podcast. We're back with another pod on Wednesday. Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds, Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews, and then Thursday, record numbers for our YouTube show on Thursday, over 3,500 views on the Thursday pod, so let's keep the momentum rolling. For Adam, I'm Tim. Thanks to Wyatt and Ryan, our producers of the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.